We go to Sportsnet's Sam Cosentino, who does Friday Night Hockey in the CHL for Sportsnet during the winter and in the summer. Now he is up and running with Dirk Hayhurst on Baseball Central Noon, something you can hear right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan, his second year of doing so. Good morning, Sammy. How are you?
Yeah, doing good. Thanks. You made a successful, or at least I think successful, switch over from hockey to baseball. So, yeah, it's been a fun couple weeks so far.
Yeah, how is the show going?
It's pretty good. Like, Dirk is on, he's got an interesting scenario in the amount of time he can spend in Canada. So he's not hosting this week. He'll be back next week. And always a lot of fun when he and I get together because we tend to have different views on a lot of things. So I think it makes for some decent listening.
Yeah, well, those guys with criminal records, you can never keep them in the country, right?
Yeah.
It's tough to find work.
Trouble getting over the border the last couple of years. I'm starting to question them.
Hey, so I mean, this is something you kick around all the time, and here we are, and it's kind of that baseball dead zone. We have to wait a couple days for the season to go. But for the Toronto Blue Jays, the All-Star break comes at a good time because you're able to, you know, assess everything and take this big, deep breath. And in the case of a Brandon Morrow or a Melky Cabrera, you get closer to coming back off the DL. But when you do take that deep breath with the Blue Jays, what do you see in the second half?
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. I don't see a whole lot different than what we've seen in the first half. I mean, with Mo, it doesn't look like he's going to be back for another few weeks. And so when you look at, you know, a top guy in the rotation, that has been missing. And you got to give credit to Mark Burley and to Ari Dickey for pitching the innings they have and taking the ball every 5 days when both of them probably haven't felt perfect. But when I look at Brandon Morrow, I mean, you know, Drew Hutchinson, Kyle Dravick, are you going to see him? Marcus Stroman is having a pretty good year in the minor leagues. Maybe he gets his opportunity. Where's Ricky Romero? All of those things I think are going to linger, at least in the early portion of the second half. And then when I look at the offense, Jose Bautista called himself out at the All-Star game saying he's probably been the model of inconsistency for the Blue Jays offense in the first half. I think one thing that should improve, you know, is the dynamic offense that I think everyone expected when this team was put together in the offseason. The ability to generate runs, to manufacture runs, as opposed to simply relying on the big home run all the time. I think with Reyes kind of back in there, he gets back into some games, then he gets the All-Star break. I think he'll be ready to go and really be a catalyst at the top of the order. So I think you'll see some improvement in the offense. I'm not so sure you're going to see much different out of the pitching. And quite honestly, I have some concerns about the bullpen with all the yanks they've had to work in the first half.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think the offense is capable of that offense, you know, going on a run. And you'll see teams with, hey, that's baseball, right? I mean, the point was made yesterday. The World Series champion Blue Jays had holes in that lineup. You know, you can find average, inconsistent offenses on great baseball teams. And I think you might see that for the Toronto Blue Jays in the sense that their offense might take off. It doesn't mean they're going to win just a whole ton of games.
No, I think the thing is, Andrew, when you look at those holes in the offense, you have to be able to bring something to the table. And if that's either the ability to move a guy over by way of the bunt or hitting it to, you know, to the right side to move a guy over, whether it's a sack fly, you have to be able to bring that to the table. Or if offense isn't your forte at all, then you better bring something to the table defensively if you're going to be a hole in the lineup. I mean, the American League doesn't allow for a lot of holes offensively in the lineup. Look at what Baltimore's done this year. You know, Boston leading the league in runs. New York missing a whole ton of guys, still able to put enough runs on the board to win games. So, you know, when I look at that situation, it's got to be. Hey, I better be able to bring something to the table if I'm going to be a hole in the lineup. But, you know, I don't think there's any question that the offense has to improve here in the second half, just in terms of consistency. But you're right; it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to go out and win 11 straight games. I think, you know, the benchmark to that 11-game win streak by the Blue Jays happened to be the starting pitching, and then everything fell in line after that.
Josh Johnson has been below average at best and awful at worst, and maybe in the greater sense of reality. I'm sure there would be a want to deal this guy in a contract year. Is there even a market? Where are we at with Josh Johnson and his future?
You know, that's a great question. And I think if there is a market, it does exist in the National League because of the success he's had there in the past. And, you know, any time a pitcher makes that jump from the National League to the American League, and in particular in the American League East, you don't realize how hard it is until you start having to pitch there. And oftentimes, you'll look for that break as the worst hitter in the National League lineups in the 8-hole, then you have the pitcher in the 9-hole, or a pinch hitter, which is usually a guy who's hitting around 220 anyways, and you give yourself that little breather, or you can manipulate getting through the lineup one more time if you can take care of those outs at the bottom of the order. Well, then in the American League, that doesn't quite happen. The lineups are so complete 1 through 9, and then you add the DH in who is normally a power guy, and you don't have that break that you have in the National League. So it's been a tough adjustment, just one win before the break. A guy who no doubt has stuff, but stuff quite obviously, at least to this point, hasn't led for wins for Johnson in the first half. But if there is a market, Andrew, I think it exists with more value in the National League.
What's been the biggest story for you? I know the Oakland A's are at it again. There's been some teams with a lot of hype, most notably the Angels and the Blue Jays struggling. Baltimore looks, I'm convinced on Baltimore. They look like a legit team. And the Pittsburgh Pirates are doing their thing again. We'll see if they can keep it up. To you, biggest story of the first half, what was it?
Well, the Oakland Athletics and Moneyball and Billy Bean and the way they've pitched, and even Cespedes really hasn't had a great first half yet. They still find themselves, very much in the mix and in the American League West. And every time you think the Oakland A's are about to go away, they seemingly come back, and next thing you know, you look, they're in first place, so they're half a game out in the National League West, and no doubt having Houston there has helped a little bit. But I think Oakland's a big surprise. I think the Boston Red Sox are a big surprise. I mean, watching John Farrell manage here the last couple of years, to think that a guy can go into Boston, into a tough media market, even though he's had some success there as a pitching coach, and basically walk in water in the first half and put his team into a real good position moving into the second half as a leader in the American League, that's been pretty impressive. But, Andrew, I like the Pittsburgh story. You go back to Willie Stargell, the We Are family, and the last couple of years, the crumbling in the second half. But Clint Hurdle really seems to have his guys on par here. And, the tough thing, kind of like the Blue Jays in the American League East, the tough thing for Pittsburgh is that they're in that National League Central, and you're always going to have that threat of the St. Louis Cardinals hanging around. So winning the division would be paramount for Pittsburgh.
Sam Cosentino from Sportsnet, host of Baseball Central, our guest. Now, as I mentioned off the top, you're coming off another edition of Friday Night Hockey in the winter. And being out east, a lot of the time you did see the Sean Monahans and the Emile Poiriers of the world a lot more than we did. We just got our first look at both of these guys at Prospect Development Camp. And I think the debate rages already if and when you keep Monahan as an 18-year-old. We'll get into that, but I want to start with Poirier. He played in Gatineau. I know you had a read on this guy, a read that a lot of people in this city did not have. Your thoughts on the pick, your thoughts on where he went, and maybe a bit of projection.
Calgary was in a real good spot because with three picks, they could afford to be a little bit risk-taking with one of them. I didn't like what they did in the first round last year, going with Jankowski, a high school guy. I thought there was a more immediate concern, a guy that you might be able to get into your lineup within 2 years. I don't think Jankowski's that guy. But when I look at this year's draft, I loved what the Calgary Flames did. And in fact, in my mock draft, I picked all three guys that the Flames did, just in a little different order. But I'm going to start first with Poirier. The last guy who was taken 22nd overall that came out of Gatineau was Claude Giroux. I'm not going to say that he's going to be that guy, but I think there's a lot to be said about playing in an organization with a coach like Benoit Grue, who does a real good job of getting his players ready for the National Hockey League. Be it Paul Byron, and I think it's a story in and of itself that a guy his size can have any NHL games at all. Be it, you look at Claude Giroux and what he's been able to do, and then you look at David Krejci. He played under Benoit Grue. So this is a guy who I think at the start of last year was a real raw talent. But in the second half, Skips really started to take notice because he has the ability to play a power forward game, but a power forward game with skill. So he'll bump you, he'll grind you into the corner, and then he'll set up shop in front of the net and be able to do things there as well to produce offensively. I love the pick. I'm quite certain that if the Calgary Flames didn't jump up and take him where he did, that he wouldn't have been available for their next pick at 28. So I thought that was a really brilliant move getting him there. So I'm a huge Poirier fan. I think his playoffs against Rimouski, which was an upset win for Gatineau in a 13-versus-4 situation, that probably vaulted him into the first round. And I think he's a real project player. But he's probably a couple years away. I think the game needs to be refined a little more. As for Sean Monahan, here's a guy who's a late birthday, who's probably over-scouted a little bit. But the thing is, even in last year's prognostications, he was a guy who was going to be a top 10 guy. And one of the guys who maintained himself as a top 10 guy without being a Seth Jones or a Nathan MacKinnon or a Jonathan Drouin. So I love this guy's two-way game. He plays a very, very subtle kind of game. He's good in the face-off circle. He'll be able to score for you. He's got real good hands and good skill. I love the pick for Calgary there. And I'm not so sure that he'll play in the National Hockey League this year, but he'll probably get it 7 or 8 games in before being sent back for junior for a little more conditioning. But this guy's knocking on the door for sure.
I do want to talk about Monahan a little more, but as it relates to Poirier, that's good stuff. A lot of people will be happy to hear you say that. What did you think of the pick in relation to the Hunter Shinkaruk slipping? Vancouver gets him 2 spots later, and obviously, being a local guy, and it does tie in, playing his junior hockey in Medicine Hat, that was kind of what stirred the waters of controversy a little bit here.
Yeah, you know what, Andrew, I kind of figured you were going to ask me that, and even in my mock draft, I had Shinkaruk slipping below 20 when even a lot of people had him in the top 15. But I talked to a lot of scouts across the National Hockey League, and there were a couple of concerns raised about Shinkaruk. First of all, it's his frame. National Hockey League scouts are wondering how much more strength, how much more weight can this guy put on his frame, and will he be playing pretty close to where he plays junior hockey now? And if so, is that frame going to be able to withstand the rigors of the National Hockey League? And then there are some concerns about his defensive game. If he's going to have the ability to adjust and learn how to play without the puck and in his own zone. Now, there's no doubt, he's a brilliant, brilliant kid. I've met him on a couple of occasions. He's an extremely dedicated kid, and there's no doubt he can score goals. But I think there was a lot more risk in that pick than many people would look at from the surface. And so, you know, not taking him there, taking Poirier, who's a little bit more of a raw project type guy, whose upside as a power forward, maybe on a second or third line, might be better than what you'd get guaranteeing Shinkaruk a top 6 spot. And that's probably the best way to put it.
So Sean Monahan, and there will be this debate, because, and I go back and forth, and I am more of the belief now more than ever that there is always a value to holding a guy back a little bit in terms of his transition to the NHL. And I wonder if you have a hard and fast rule on this, if you have to take it case by case, because I think for every Gabriel Landeskog that comes in at 18 and obviously is NHL ready, and not only that, but ready to lead as they hand him the captaincy in his first offseason as a pro, I think you'll see a guy that you know, basically just wastes a year of his 7 years prior to UFA. And just because you're good enough to make a team doesn't mean you're NHL ready. And I'm very interested to see what route they take with Monahan.
Yeah, that's going to be fascinating for me to watch as well. But I would not be a fan of keeping him there. You know, I might keep him there for the first week of the season, give him a little taste, maybe get him into try and sneak him into a game early on where you know that, you know, maybe wins and losses early in the season aren't quite as important, just to give him a little taste, just to give him a little incentive. But when I look at Sean Monahan, to me, he's a guy who can play, you know, a top 6 role on Canada's World Junior team. He's going to go back to an Ottawa team that's in a rebuild mode. So for the first part of the year, he's going to have to be a little bit more vocal. He's going to have to become a bit more of a leader than what he's used to in the past. And then you look at a situation going to the World Juniors, being a top 6 guy, playing big minutes there, playing against tougher competition, getting some experience where, you know, Canada expects to be in the medal round, so hopefully some winning experience in that regard. And then what is likely a trade to a contending team in the Ontario Hockey League to continue on with winning. And I think that's just so important, is being able to win at a young age. So I wouldn't be a fan if they kept them up in the National Hockey League for an extended period of time, but a couple of games to give him some incentive would be just fine by me, and then see him back in junior would be the red eye taking his development.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, and I think we all know where the Calgary Flames are right now as an organization. If an 18-year-old is able to make the Calgary Flames, it doesn't necessarily mean he's doing everything right. It's just kind of a product of the competition. And B, I've never really agreed with the sentiment, because I've heard, well, you know, why send him back? He has nothing more to prove at junior. You always have something more to prove in junior, especially in his case.
But don't you think that, you know, character is, to me, is a lot, and this guy's loaded with character. So there's two things here. There's the motivational factor by giving him a little taste of the NHL, but I also think that hey, you're put in a tough situation. How are you going to face adversity going back to an Ottawa team that's not expected to do a whole lot in the Ontario Hockey League, where you have to be the lead dog there and you have to be the guy who produces? I think putting a kid in that adversity, yet in a situation in which he is still comfortable, is very, very good for his development. And so rather than have him hang around and third and fourth line minutes and the odd healthy scratch and in the NHL, I think guys at this age, they need to play, and because they're good players, they need to play big minutes. And the only option for them to do that is playing at the junior level. So I'm a big proponent of him going back.
Good stuff, Sam. I just quickly, off the top of my head, because we've been kind of kicking it around a little bit, how far back do you go with and covering and watching Gilbert Brulé? And I'm intrigued to see if you read that article in The Province yesterday.
I did not read the article in The Province, but I watched him when he was at his very best in the 2006 MasterCard Memorial Cup, which was my first fight for the Vancouver Giants. And next to Alexander Radulov in that event, he was the best player, and there were some that argue he might have even had a better tournament than Radulov did. So very familiar with him for sure.
Yeah, and it's about him basically resurrecting his hockey career and some of the off-the-board struggles that I think not everybody realized, as far as depression and an estranged relationship with his father and things like that. He is working out in Vancouver. He is trying to resurrect his career as an NHLer and at 26 years of age and with his pedigree. And it's one of those things, right? We've seen a lot of good players in junior, and a lot of them just aren't good enough to make that jump. And hasn't Brulé always been the guy that you've said to yourself, it's not because of what he is? It has to be other factors.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And I saw some of those troubling signs even when watching him play in the 05-06 season, so it doesn't surprise me that some of this stuff has started to come out now. But this guy's a National Hockey League talent. But what he is not is a first-round, sixth overall pick. And I think when those expectations are placed on you, some of the other things in your life tend to fall out of place, because those expectations don't only come from the hockey world, but they come from your personal world. I think this guy has a chance to play in the National Hockey League as a third-line guy whose success is predicated on hard work and the ability to every now and then put the puck in the net. But to me, he was never really a first-round guy, and unfortunately those expectations were placed on him when Columbus took him where they did.
Great catching up, Sammy. We'll talk soon. Thanks for this.
Thanks, Andrew. Take care.
That is Sam Cosentino from Sportsnet, host of Baseball Central.